everyone, and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf.
What up, bro? Give it up.
What up, man?
That is the Hall of Famer, Chris Carter. That is Nick Wright. We love each other on this show. 30
Chris
seconds prior
say
to the show,
anything
30
to
seconds
you.
After.
10 seconds before we go on the air.
Yeah.
Every day, yes. It's a joke.
Yes.
Every day, it's totally implausible. And
every
day, you're like,
well,
really?
I know. Every day.
Seriously?
But that's why
I've got blueberries in my teeth. I haven't had blueberries
every
in
day.
6 weeks, but somehow they're there.
Show's about to start. You have something in your teeth.
Oh, my God.
Right there. Big
you
Wednesday
just fall
show today.
For it every time.
But he keeps doing it. We have new reports on Kyrie reuniting with LeBron. We got more teams getting in the Anthony Davis mix, but of course we are going to start with some football. Come this Sunday, Tom Brady will take the field for his 9th Super Bowl, his 3rd in a row. And for a player as accomplished as he is, you'd think that just getting to this point would be a win at this stage. Well, you'd be thinking wrong. Tom Brady gave us a little insight on the radio yesterday into wins, losses, and legacy. Take a listen.
You know, we just realize everything we got to put into it. And I think, you know, if you get to this game and you don't perform your best and you don't perform well enough to win, you kick yourself for the rest of your life. And I don't think anyone wants to go through that. And I think hopefully we learn that lesson, and hopefully that serves as some motivation that the whole point of this week is to win the game. And if you win it, you know, you'll have something to celebrate for the rest of your life. And if you don't, you know, it'll be some mental scar tissue that you have to deal with for the rest of your life.
Mental scar tissue. That's pretty impactful to use that term that way. But CeCe, how much do you think the outcome of the Super Bowl will impact Tom Brady's legacy? Or has his career done enough to cement that?
Well, you can't get better than being the GOAT. So that's where he is now. I think right now it's more of a matter with Tom Brady. And I think it's very important that we listen to Tom and what he's saying. I don't have the personal experience. I do have very good friends that have lost the Super Bowl. I did lose 2 NFC championship games. And all the people in the NFL, they tell you, once you get into the playoffs, losing the wild card, yeah, you're upset. Losing the divisional round, very upset. You losing the championship round, all right, which I did twice. It's devastating. And then I've had the friends that lose the Super Bowl. Imagine losing 3 of them. Now, that's what's at stake. Because Tom Brady, and in no parts of his does he want to be 5-4 after 9 appearances. Yeah, the 9 appearances have been great. But when you start looking at it, man, he could end up being 5-4, losing 2 to Eli, 1 to Nick Foles as a backup, and now 1 to a 24-year-old. It will affect his legacy, but more importantly, it's going to affect him. These are not games you recover from. These are not games that you say, oh, well, next season we'll get it back. Tom Brady understands what's at stake. He's been in more of these games than anyone else, and there's no guarantee that he'll ever be in another one to get to number 10. So I think it's very important that he finishes, that he can be 6-3, regardless of how he's played, because even in the losses, Tom Brady has been brilliant. But it's about winning and losing as an NFL quarterback. And right now, he's 5-3. And I believe those 3 leave more of a scar on him than he cherishes the 5, even though I know he cherishes those 5.
So the legacy part, let me address initially, and then we'll get to the scar tissue part. To me, I will never agree with people that say being 5-0, which nobody is, but 5-0 in Super Bowls is better than being 5-3 in Super Bowls. I think that's an absurdity. Getting to the Super Bowl is an accomplishment. If I've got 5 gold medals with 3 silvers, that's better than 5 gold medals with 0 silvers. You can't convince me Tom Brady's legacy would be more intact had he lost to Blake Bortles and the Jacksonville Jaguars in last year's AFC Championship game, and then he wouldn't have lost to the Philadelphia Eagles. Then he'd be 5-2. So legacy-wise, I think every round you win is an accomplishment. And of course, he'd like to be 8-0. But to me, 5-3 is better than 4-0, better than 5-0. It's better than 5-1 because it means you got there 2 more times. So on legacy, I think he is cemented. And I think this is just something we do wrong in counting the losses, but only the losses in the championship round. But what he said, I find fascinating because this is one of the instances where the people who didn't play, myself, need to listen to the people who did. Because what he is saying is that we go into every year, we want to win a Super Bowl. But even when you're the Patriots, you know you probably won't. As great, as much success as they've had since he's been there, 13 years they didn't win it, 5 years they did. But the impact, it doesn't, losing to Peyton Manning in the AFC Championship game, that hurts. Losing to Mark Sanchez in the divisional round, that hurts. But the loss, the three losses that he is saying will stick with him the rest of his life are those three Super Bowls. And if they lose on Sunday, there will be a fourth. I find it really, a really fascinating window into the level of pain that is magnified if you get this close. I know from talking to Chris that one of the losses that made you consider, man, why am I even still playing? Was one of those devastating NFC Championship losses. Not, I don't think it was the 98 loss, and I don't mean to bring up bad experience, but it was, you and I have talked about it, that you had a moment where you're like, man, I started my training in March. I have put my body through everything, and we were this close. Well, Brady's talking about getting a step closer and then falling short. And the
Three times.
And the impact that has.
And it's more traumatic because he's in control of 60 or 70 of the plays in the game.
Yeah.
He's got his hand on the heartbeat and the pulse of the game. He can make a drastic difference in his decision-making in the game. He has the ability to make more players better in the game because he is the quarterback. So in talking to these guys that have lost, the quarterbacks, because just like they get more credit, they assume more blame. And that's where Tom Brady does not want to be when he leaves Atlanta.
How hard is it then to come off a loss like he did last year? And then, like we hear Coach Mangini say all the time, it is a new season, it is a fresh slate, and you just wipe out everything. Last year was last year, and you start fresh. How hard is it for a guy who's now been there, done that, has sort of accrued those losses, and has to get back up and start the entire process over again?
Well, I think it's fair to say that New England, they didn't have a Super Bowl hangover. We talk about Philadelphia because they won. Typically, the team that loses, typically they struggle more in that next season coming up. But Tom Brady was not nearly as good as he's been the last couple years. So we can't say that he bounced back from that defeat with stellar numbers. Now, you're also fighting age. So we got to be fair in there. So I believe in losing that game last year, it affected Tom Brady. I believe it puts more pressure on him going into this game than even Jared Goff. And regardless, I know that Tom's been there more. I know he's been in these situations more. Yes, but there's no one in that building on Sunday will have more pressure on them than Tom Brady, and the fact that he might not ever, ever get back to one of these games. I know he's thinking about that.
Well, and the way they lost last year. We all watched that game, and we all thought, at least I can speak for myself, this is going to be, Brady's going to have found a new way to add to his legacy. Two Super Bowls prior, down 10 in the fourth quarter against Seattle. They win, they come back, but the story there really is the interception on the goal line by Russell Wilson. Then a couple Super Bowls later, but for him, the next one, the one against Atlanta, his crowning achievement as an athlete, I believe, the 28-3 comeback when they look dead in the water. And now he's going to add to it. Down 5, waning moments of the Super Bowl, drive for a touchdown, and then Brandon Graham took the ball from him. And it didn't have to happen. Like, I'm not blaming Brady. That's partially on him. Like, that
Brady very seldom has ever been on the field in the closing moments. Those first Super Bowls, how'd they win them? Vinatieri kicking a field goal.
Yep.
Malcolm Butler won them a Super Bowl by himself. He wasn't on the field. I thought the fact of him being on the field in Philadelphia, having that fumble, and then also having a Hail Mary there at the end, he was on the field when the confetti dropped, when all the chaos, and he's used to celebrating, all those people running around him. I believe that right there, that feeling right there, is very, very different for him too.
Will Sunday's outcome change the way either of you see Tom Brady?
It can only enhance it to me. I don't think it's on the board that Brady plays a horrible game. The worst Super Bowl he's ever played was the undefeated team in 07, and in that game he had one touchdown, no picks. Like he would have to have a four turnover game, just look like a shell of himself for it to knock himself down a little bit.
To me, it's going to be about missed opportunity, because the question will be, wow, how many should he have won? Because you lose two to Eli Manning as the prohibitive favorite.
Huge favorite.
You lose to Nick Foles as a backup when you throw for 500 yards. I mean, that's a lot of torment. And now you lose to a 24-year-old if they weren't able to win on that right. Regardless of what you want to say, it changes some of the other conversation. The beginning of the conversation will, yes, he's the GOAT, but it will be a but. How many should he have won?
And it's, I should make it clear, the fact that I don't count championship losses makes me the outlier. Well, what do we hear about LeBron? 3-6. With Brady, what we were starting with going into that fourth quarter against Seattle, heard people saying he about to be from 3-0 to 3-3. Just because I don't think that's how it should be evaluated, the general public has decided that is how you're evaluated.
Tom Brady was actually asked about being compared to LeBron. We're going to talk about that coming up. But on the other side, former Patriot, current Ram, Brandon Cooks. Could he be the X factor in the Super Bowl? That's next on FS1. And big week here, first things first. We've got some great guests lined up this week. Saquon Barkley, Matt Ryan, Chris Long, Christian McCaffrey all joining us in the next couple of days, all down there in Atlanta.
Super exciting.
Yeah.
Two of the best young running backs in the league, MVP quarterback, one of the best people in football, Chris Long.
We'll talk some Brandon Cooks in a second, but first, Thunder magic from last night. Russ Westbrook on the fast break out the Euro step.
Goodness great. That human pogo stick. Goodness. Oh,
the hair ain't going to save you, Jonathan Isaac. Look at
that. Man, Russ was playing some outstanding basketball.
That's a fun team right now.
Bucks and Pistons, Giannis. Pokes it away from Blake Griffin. Game. Eric Bledsoe leads the break. Drops the dime back to Giannis.
Oh, no. Giannis with some defense. Reward and Bledsoe. Giannis opened this game up with a corner three. Took him about 6 seconds to launch it. Pistons were daring him to launch it.
I'm just giving a shout out people playing good. Bledsoe's playing some good basketball with Milwaukee also.
Absolutely.
Lakers, Sixers, Brandon Ingram comes down the lane, dunks on Corey Brewer.
Man. Brandon Ingram going to look good in a Pelly's uniform.
Now, I'm going to tell you, now you're not going to have two skinnier guys ever before colliding hips here, okay? Brandon Ingram, man, he's about $1.80. Yep. And my man he's dunking on, he's about $1.60.
Corey Brewer, you got what you deserve, man. Got what you deserve right there.
What about the career high for Ingram, man?
We're going to talk about that later. I said he's going to look great in a Pelly's jersey.
Ooh, finally. This is Tennessee against South Carolina.
Jeez.
The Vols' Lamonte Turner goes backdoor, finishes with the up-and-under layup.
Tennessee, maybe the best team in all of college basketball.
Good basketball team.
I think Duke's probably better, but Tennessee's had the better year so far. Look at Lamonte Turner.
They're going to be a tough out in the tournament. I believe they win the SEC this year, too. No Big Blue, no Kentucky.
Oh.
Tennessee wins the SEC.
Eat that,
you heard it here first. I'm making a list.
Okay. Moving on to the Rams receiver, Brandon Cooks. He was Patriots receiver, Brandon Cooks, last season before being traded to the Rams. Oh, how karma works. Responded to the change of scenery by catching 80 balls for over 1,200 yards this season. Let's just say Sean McVay is happy he's on his team.
I could go on and on about what he's done for this football team, and he's been instrumental in us getting here. I love that guy, and you can't say enough good things about Brandon Cooks. I can promise you this, we're not trading him.
All right.
Eat that.
Eat that, Sean Payton and Bill Belichick. See, how important is Brandon Cooks to the Rams' chances of beating the Patriots on Sunday?
I think Brandon Cooks has really been underrated no matter where he's been, because all he's been consistent. 1,000-yard, 1,200-yard receiver ever since his rookie year, since drafted by New Orleans. People would think that there might be some type of problem or issue. With New Orleans, the problem and issue was Michael Thomas. As a young second-round receiver, they knew they were going to have to give him long money, so they traded him off because if you can get a first-rounder from New England, you make that trade. He goes there, has another consistent. Tom Brady bragged about him, he was everything but a diva receiver. He was the Patriot way right from the beginning, a consummate pro, very, very mature at a young age. And that's why Sean McVay decided that, listen, if I'm going to run this offense here, I got to be able to resurrect Jared Goff's career. I'm going to need some guys that can threaten the field with some speed. Because, yes, we want to run the ball. We want to do a lot of motion. But I want to play three receivers. I want to play from tight formations where you're not going to be able to bump them. So I believe he's even more effective in this offense. Well, because of formations, you can't get in front of him to prohibit him from getting down the field utilizing his speed. He's an underrated route runner. And he's a great guy to have in the locker room. So people talk about what they did, Les Snead, what they did, Sean McVay. We know that the defensive side, they took care of that with Wade Phillips. But when you bring in guys like Marcus Peters, Aqib Talib. You need stabilizing other players like Ndamukong Suh and Brandon Cooks. These guys don't talk a lot. They're the consummate pros, and I don't think we have given them enough credit. We always said, oh, the Rams, they got a bunch of malcontents. No, they don't. They got guys like Brandon Cooks and Ndamukong Suh have been consummate pros. So not only in trying to run this offense, trying to make Jared Goff comfortable, they got a guy that's great. That's why they gave him that contract extension in that locker room.
And usually when you're a first-round pick and you get traded and you've been on three teams in the first 5 years, yeah, it's because something's wrong with you. Yes. Not when you were a first-round pick.
Sammy Watkins.
Sure. That's a really good example. A player that people see the talent, but you can't get it out of him in Buffalo. And then the Rams try to get it out of him, but they don't want to pay him. And the Chiefs pay him. Brandon Cooks was first-round pick. And then he was traded to New England for a first-round pick. And then he was traded to the Rams for a first-round pick. First player who's been worth three first-round picks since RG3, I guess. And RG3 ended up not being worth it, but he was cost you three first-round picks. He has been, as C mentioned, his rookie season had 550 yards just because of a lack of opportunities. Every year since then, he's been at over 1,000 yards, and he's been one of the best deep ball receivers in football. I'll tell you this much. The Patriots are very happy, obviously, with their offseason, the decisions they made, even though we questioned it. This trade, they traded him for the draft pick that became Isaiah Wynn. They obviously didn't know Isaiah Wynn was going to play zero snaps for him. Mm-hmm. In this specific matchup, they're wishing they hadn't made this trade. Maybe for the future they're fine with it, but they would much rather Brandon Cooks not be someone that Stephon Gilmore and that secondary has to account for this coming Sunday.
Right, and he's more than just a speed guy. You talked about the last 3 years, his consistency, one of the best deep threats we have in the NFL. Him, Julio Jones, Antonio Brown. He's got 42 catches where the ball has traveled more than 20 yards, and he's done this with three different quarterbacks. So the only people to have more are those wide receivers that I mentioned. And speaking to him doing it with three different receivers, it lets you know his football IQ must be very, very high. And his overall chemistry, our quarterbacks being able to figure out what he's going to run, his body language, he must run the route tree very good to be able to do that. Now, people will say, well, he had Drew Brees, he had Tom Brady, now he's got Jared Goff. No drop-off when he goes to the young Goff with the experienced quarterbacks that he had the two previous teams.
How hard is that as a wide receiver to come to a new franchise, a new organization, a new quarterback, a new offense, a new offensive coordinator for you, and to be able to put up those same numbers as you have in the years prior? I mean, you got to learn it and then be able to go out and execute.
And he's hadn't had the type of offensive talent. Even though he was in New Orleans, they weren't as talented as they are with the Rams. Because when the Rams start today, it's how do I salvage Jared Goff's career? All right? How do I have Todd Gurley? When you're the third mention in what we're going to do offensively, man, you have to be very, very consistent. So he's a stabilizing force for Sean McVay for everything that I want to run. He's not a whole bunch of maintenance. And I'm going to get 1,200 yards. He's going to play 14 to 16 games. And if he doesn't get, Nick, you pointed out last year, if he doesn't get knocked out of last year's Super Bowl, New England's going to beat Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. He got concussed late in the second half of that game.
He caught a ball and kind of did a circle looking for a place to run. Somebody came over and crushed
him. So why is he on his third team now?
So let's just go situation by situation. New Orleans, it was Michael Thomas is emerging as a star in this league, and we're going to have to pay him, and we can't pay him both. So New Orleans said, put him on the market for what they spent on him, a first-round pick, and New England said, we're going for it right now. They didn't know how much longer Brady had. Last year, they had a very odd offseason where they really seemed to be in win-now mode, which they hadn't been. New England then sees, okay, we actually can get what we paid for him right back. So New England, it's always about value propositions. They don't like giving out big contracts. He was in line for a contract that would have paid him more than Brady. And New England says, hold on, we gave up the 30th pick for you, or 32nd pick. We can get back the 23rd pick, and we got you for a year, so we'll send you out. And the Rams got to him and said, we'll just instantly pay you.
Here's $88 million.
Right. He won't be on another team anytime soon. So it's a very odd circumstance where New Orleans had a player who they felt was better, younger, and they had to pay. New England is just always about winning the transaction and feeling like we can. Remember, they didn't have Edelman last year. They knew Edelman was coming back this year.
That's why I think it's important to know the personality. And no, he's a first-class guy. He's a consummate pro. Everything but a diva, a stabilizing force in any locker room. Go back and read or watch the clips of Tom Brady and what he says about Brandon Cook and how professional he was from day one when he arrived in New England.
All right, let's take a break. Talk some basketball. Could Kyrie and LeBron reunite in L.A.? That is next on First Things First.
There's something about auctions that makes shopping so much more fun. For sports fans, it probably has something to do with the competition and suspense that auctions provide. But who wants to spend time researching where their nearest auction house is and then make the trek all the way there? I definitely don't. And that's why I love Pristine Auction, an online sports auction house where you can buy and sell sports memorabilia from the comfort of your own home. Pristine Auction runs tons of different auction formats, including multiple weekly auctions, a premium monthly auction, as well as daily and 10-minute auctions. They guarantee the authenticity of all of their items, and everything you purchase comes from only the most trusted sources. And the best part? It's so affordable. I just saw an autographed Ricky Stenhouse Jr. photo that sold for only $6. Go check out Pristine Auction now. You'll be hooked. It's free to register, free to bid, and you only pay for the items you win. That's pristineauction.com. And when you register, be sure to select First Things First podcast from the drop-down menu in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Let them know we sent you. Make sure you select First Things First podcast from the drop-down menu when you go to pristineauction.com.
This February, the greatest event in motorsports is back. The Daytona 500 kicks off the 2019 NASCAR season February 17th, only on Fox. Time now for us to go viral. This is great. Check this out. Former Dodger, now Reds outfielder Yasiel Puig, keeping in shape. How? Throwing axes this offseason. Looks like it's working for him. He's got some slick moves. I wouldn't be holding the axe there. I would hold a little lower, but that's just my axe policy.
So this is like a new thing now. Our guy Hubs, who works with us, he's gone to one of these things, one of these axe throwing, I don't know if I want to call it a bar. It's a place you can go with friends, and it's like a target range.
Well, let me tell you
guns throwing axes.
Okay, because I've lived in both of these places, all right?
Cincinnati,
I've lived in Los Angeles, and I grew up in Middletown.
Right.
Very short little.
I can't wait for this.
From Cincinnati.
Here we go.
You better find a lot of activity, because it's not Los Angeles. You're going to throw some axes, you're going to be throwing a bunch of it.
Man.
You better find some time.
I'm sad that Yasiel's no longer on one of the premier teams. He's one of my favorite players in baseball.
Yeah, you said that last year.
I prefer he get a rule book and learn the rules of baseball.
Okay.
All right, time for stories to start your morning. Brandon Ingram had a nice night last night, scored 36 in the Lakers' loss to the Sixers. Nick, you think Brandon Ingram is still a Laker in 2 weeks?
I know the team hopes he's not, and that's nothing against him, but he would be the piece in the Anthony Davis trade. I know the team was thrilled that last night he had the best night of his career. Not only 36 points, but on 80% shooting. Now, I know the Lakers lost that game, but he looked outstanding. The knock on him has been he's a scorer who doesn't ever have the big scoring night. 36 points, that's a good step in the right direction. Great night for Brandon Ingram.
Still has tremendous potential. Still very, very young. Hasn't been worth that number two lottery pick that they used on him, but he should be the centerpiece to trading for AD.
All right, to the Super Bowl. Todd Gurley had just 4 carries for 10 yards against the Saints, leading many to worry about his health. Head coach Sean McVay doesn't seem to be among those concerned. He says Gurley will be a big part of the team's Super Bowl plans. CeCe, what do you expect from Gurley on Sunday?
Man, I'm expecting to see as much as Todd Gurley as I used to when I turned on the SEC and I watch him playing for the Georgia Bulldogs. He was returning kicks. He was doing everything, all Mr. Everything for the Georgia Bulldogs. That's what I expect when he gets back to the state of Georgia. Look for him to play a bigger impact coming out of the backfield against those, which I would call speed-challenged linebackers of New England.
And I would argue the Patriots haven't played a truly great running back in a Super Bowl since the very first Super Bowl, Marshall Faulk. And they found a great way to slow him down, but Coach Mangini told us that was just because they refused to run the ball with him, the Rams.
Mike Martz and his ego.
Right, and Marshawn Lynch was the best of the other bunch, but Todd Gurley's of a different class.
Yes.
And so, he's the key player for the Rams on Sunday.
All right, finally, Tom Brady and LeBron James, two of the most successful athletes of this generation. Tom Brady was asked about the similarities between he and LeBron. Take a listen to this.
We're similar athletes. LeBron and I, both great size and speed, jumping ability, shooting. Not quite. No, he's a much better athlete than me.
Maybe he's a better athlete, not necessarily more successful. I would say right up there. But, Nick, what similarities do you see between these two superstars?
There's actually, to me, a ton of very obvious similarities. Their most impressive parts of their resume, or near the top of the list, is longevity and ability to stay in their prime as long as anyone in their respective sports ever. Their commitment to off-season training, health, wellness that has allowed them to stay as healthy as any player in the history of their respective sports.
Also really. Doing some experimentation also with their own body, their own diet. LeBron's gone through several different things. Remember the time in Miami where he started riding his bike and everything to work? He started having the bad back problems, changed up his training regimen. We've seen Brady as far as his eating. So I see a lot of similarities as far as the greatest that have ever done it. Their commitment to doing it, regardless of what their talent is, regardless of what their skill is, committing everything to doing it and the demand it is on the other people that play with them. I know players that have played with LeBron, talk to him. I know players that have played with Brady. And they're persistent to be great every day, how it drives the organization and individuals in that organization.
And for both of these players, the unprecedented run of every year being there at the end. This decade, which for both of these guys should have been close to the closing decade of their careers, this decade, LeBron's been in the finals every single year. Wow. Tom Brady's been in the Final Four every single year. We don't see that in modern sports. And lastly, for both of these guys, they are both at the top, if not near the top, if not at the top, of the most clutch players their sport's ever seen. Brady, with all the fourth quarter comebacks, lapping the field in that regard.
Sure.
LeBron with more game winners, game seven scoring average, closeout game scoring average than any player we've ever seen. Like, both of those guys have had the ability to raise their game in the biggest moments, and that, to me, is what really connects them.
I'll throw something else in there. There are two of the smartest athletes with respect to their games. They know their sport as well, if not better, than anyone else that plays, and they continue to know more. Both of these guys, you can ask after a game, you know, take us back, and they'll remember the plays, they'll remember the way they happen, they'll remember the way they see it, almost more so X's and O's wise than any other player, and they want to continue to learn more.
In very few instances have I ever seen the best not be almost brilliant to geniuses at the sport. And we don't equate higher IQ, higher learning with athletics. And we miss that. I used to tell people all the time, Randy Moss was a genius. He was brilliant as far as football. I tell him something, man, he will remember it. I teach him a coverage, he will remember it. We would make a foul of other cornerbacks, man, he would remember the things that we were trying to do. So I think that's something that, in pointing out the guys at the top, and Brady and LeBron being a part of that, man, they're brilliant at what they do. They play at a total different level than everyone else is playing.
And see, you and I were talking about this before the show. The other thing that they have that not many, if any, athletes in their sports can say is it's the team success and the ability to be there at the end is almost irrespective of the talent around them. And by that, I mean this. You can give Brady a great team. And you see what happens? The 07 Pats, right?
Right.
Give LeBron a great team. And you see what happens? Win 27 in a row like they did with Miami.
Mm-hmm.
But give Brady a team where they got 33 new receivers, where they trade away their number one, where they deal
right.
with injuries. And you know what? They're in the Super Bowl. Give LeBron the team he had last year with no Kyrie in Cleveland.
Yeah.
Guess what? They're in the NBA
Put
Finals.
Put Brady on a great defensive team, a team that runs the ball. Put him at the end of the game, because that's what he did in the first three Super Bowls. He's going to drive you down the field to put you in game winning so you can win before he's ready to be able to dominate those games. So he's basically had two Hall of Fame careers doing it two different ways, and it speaks to how much he uses his brain to be able to play at that level.
The two Hall of Fame careers, that's the other thing, is if you chop Tom Brady's career, if Tom Brady's career ended in 2010, he's a first ballot Hall of Famer, right? And if his career started in 2011, he's a first ballot Hall of Famer. If LeBron James's career ended after his second year with the Miami Heat, He's one of the greatest players of all time.
Yes.
If it began with his third year with the Miami Heat, he's one of the greatest players of all time. In football, you can only say that about a handful of guys. In basketball, you can say it about Kareem. You can say it about Jordan. There's only a couple guys who have stacked a Hall of Fame career on top of a Hall of Fame career.
But there's you'd think, though, that if LeBron did play football, he'd probably be at the top of his game if Tom Brady played basketball.
Okay, well, that's, yeah. It'd be tough for Tom Brady to play basketball. It'd be tough.
Let's just end the comparison.
Okay. All right. All right, back to the world of NBA rumors, because we have a lot of them now. Kyrie Irving apparently thinking along the same lines as Anthony Davis. According to reports now, Kyrie is genuinely interested in reuniting with LeBron James in Los Angeles as a Laker. According to Fact, they used to be teammates in Cleveland before Kyrie demanded a trade before the start of last season. Nick, how surprising is it that now Kyrie wants to reunite with LeBron, given the way the two ended, that marriage ended?
It would have been shocking to me 2 weeks ago. I would have said, if I heard this report 2 weeks ago, I would have said, impossible, 0%. I went on TV Friday morning before LeBron sent out this Instagram, before there started being speculation, and I tried to tell folks there was more to that phone call than had been reported. And it wasn't about planning for the future. It was not about these two guys saying, as far as I know, it was not about next year we should come together on the same team. It was about, man, how great was that? And did both of us not really recognize in the moment what a special thing we had and how important it was for the way each of our games are, how well we fit together? Spent too much time maybe butting heads instead of recognizing what we had there. And from that moment forward, to me, this wouldn't be surprising. I still don't think it's the most likely option. I don't think the most likely outcome is Kyrie as a Laker. But I know it's on the board. And I know for Kyrie and for LeBron, it could make an enormous amount of sense.
What would have to happen for all that to take place?
Well, the number one thing that had to happen already happened. And that was Kyrie admitting that he was wrong. See, I'm not as surprised as Nick is, because when you have one person at its fault, anything's possible. If you had both people had done something wrong, if LeBron behind with the Cleveland brass there, if he had kind of orchestrated getting Kyrie out, or LeBron knew more about that and Kyrie took exception to that, that wasn't the case. Kyrie was mad at Cleveland because he heard that they were potentially shopping him. Then he decided to advance that and say, I want out. LeBron was like, keep the kid. We'll work it out. So there's a possibility when one person's at fault, the first thing to do is for that person to realize it. That's what Kyrie did. And in realizing it now, as far as Kyrie moving forward, he's going to have several options. Nick and I never thought that he was going to stay in Boston. Do you want a team with KD potentially in New York? You don't know if he's going to come. LeBron's already in L.A. So for me, it's who you have to team with. And LeBron would have to be a viable option if he's trying to win championship. If he's trying to go back down deja vu and been like, oh, down memory lane, then it should be about trying to get a championship team. So LeBron would have to be one of the options if his apology was sincere. And obviously, based on what everyone else is reading, it was very sincere.
And this is where I think people can learn the lesson of, even when you're angry or things look bad, scorching the earth is not necessarily a good option. Because LeBron could have made himself at fault after the fact. LeBron could have, after the trade happened, could have said some things either on the record or off the record negative about Kyrie. Could have done one of those very passive-aggressive Instagram things that he's known to do. LeBron always stayed above the fray on it. And then when the Celtics played the Cavs that first game of the year and Kyrie missed the potential game winner in the corner, LeBron instantly went over, gave him a hug, patted him on the head, maybe a little condescending. And he, whenever he was asked about it, he always spoke good about the kid, as he called him. And that left the door open to, if Kyrie wanted to reconcile, they could. To answer your question, how would it happen? Well, there's the very basic, he's a free agent. The Lakers could just sign him outright this offseason, even if they don't get Anthony Davis. The more interesting of the options is, if the Lakers execute a trade for Anthony Davis before the deadline, the right trade, and they leave the money open, because there has been so much talk around the league about Kyrie and Anthony Davis playing together. Everyone always assumed that would be in Boston. It's one of the reasons the Celtics were so thrilled to get Kyrie Irving. Those two guys have such a good relationship, those two guys being Anthony Davis and Kyrie. But I don't think those two guys care where they play together. I do think Anthony Davis and Kyrie would like to play together. It's one of the reasons why the trade request for Anthony Davis was made when it was, to try to set the second domino in motion to see if the third one can fall this summer.
What happened to the Boston Celtics? Yes, last year they were, this was their path. It was they had young talent who were clearly on the rise. There was talk Kyrie wanted to stay. He said he wanted to stay. And now it seems like he wants to jump ship and they're losing guys and they're not going to get Anthony Davis. I mean, this was a team that was up here that seems to be now trending downwards.
Well, right now, no need to overreact.
I love it. I do it so well.
I'm going to try to give you some information that you won't have to overreact. What you decide to do with that is totally up to you. There's 40 games. We still haven't even gotten to the All-Star break. We don't know what's going to happen with Boston, because if Boston's able to make it to the finals, this would have been a great year.
And it changes
now,
things.
No, so I just say don't overreact right now. Kyrie, it was always on the board that he could leave Boston. Now, young players, they just assume, oh, we went to the Eastern Conference Finals last year. I might have scored 13 points. Next year, I'm going to get 15 to 18. I might have played 22 minutes. Now I'm going to get more minutes. It doesn't always work out like that. Kyrie didn't come to training camp in great shape. And I didn't think the accolades people were giving Brad Stevens, especially this guy, I wasn't in a rush to do that because I hadn't seen him coach great players. And I was concerned. And the NBA is different than Butler. And what they had last year with the injuries was like Butler. When you get an NBA roster with egos and all that, that's what they're experiencing now. So then I don't see the greatness. I don't hear commentators saying, oh, Brad Stevenson, great in-game adjustment. No, they're struggling just like everyone else. So how will Brad Stevens do coaching elite talent? The jury is still out on that.
And I also don't think the sky is falling in Boston yet, because it is on the board Kyrie stays. It's on the board they get Anthony Davis. But people were doing some assumptions involving the Celtics that I would never engage in. People said, oh, well, of course they're going to win 60-plus games next year. They're getting back two All-Stars. Well, turns out they didn't. They got back one All-Star in Kyrie Irving, who they had for 60 games last year. Gordon Hayward right now is a net negative when he's on the court. We also just said Jason Tatum's here. To your point, he's definitely going to be here. Jaylen Brown's here. He's definitely going to be here. Terry Rozier's here. He'll stay there even though his role's going to be reduced. None of those things happened. And people took, as absolute as if it was written on a stone tablet, Kyrie Irving saying, in October, I'm going to re-sign in July. And I do not believe Kyrie was lying. I believe in that moment he meant it. But people change their minds. And so all of that, plus they had baked in, and they'll probably be the team that gets Anthony Davis. I was not willing to give them any of that. And then you add, oh, Toronto added Kawhi Leonard. The Bucks got a real coach. Philadelphia added Jimmy Butler, and a team that we thought was going to be the most well-rounded, the deepest, the clear favorite in the East. They've been in fifth place in the East all year long. So that changes the math for the Celtics as well.
At least they've been consistent. So yeah, fifth place in the East all year. Hey, coming up, what does this Super Bowl mean for Tom Brady's legacy? That's next on First Things First. Here, First Things First, former NFL head coach Eric Mangini joins the program and the conversation and all of it. How's it going, Coach?
Fantastic.
Yeah? Enjoying the warmth here in New York City?
Beautiful.
It's balmy. It's like a balmy 12 outside. All right, Coach, let's talk about the Super Bowl. Rams defensive coordinator Wade Phillips is certainly no stranger to Tom Brady. This will be the 10th meeting, including playoffs, between the two, with Brady owning a 6-3 record. So it should come as no surprise that Wade Phillips says, quote, you cannot fool the great quarterbacks. You have to outplay them. Coach, how do you think Wade Phillips plans to prepare his team to outplay Tom Brady on Sunday?
Well, the one thing that happens all during the course this week is there's a lot of bouquets that are going to be thrown out to guys, and there's a lot of things that people are going to say about how great somebody is. And look, nobody's telling the truth. You have to give Tom Brady something different. You have to. You have no chance to just line up and play and beat him, because if he knows what you're in, he's going to go to the right spot. And we've seen that over and over again, going back and watching Kansas City and even the week before.
The Charger game.
It was just a mismatch because guys were wide open based off of pre-snap read and coverage. And I think Wade will mix some things in. I went back and watched a little bit of their Houston playoff game. And it was a while ago, but there was some variation there. There were linemen that were standing up. They walked guys around. And when you look at the Rams' defense, there is some certainty in it. And Aaron Donald and Dominican Sue, you can get them into certain places. I would think that they would try to switch that up some because you can then slide the protection, which means bring the center over to get 3-on-2 on those guys. Same things with the corners. If you always know that you've got Tlaib on your right and Peters on your left, you can create some matchups there. And that's something that they're going to have to switch and adjust. Otherwise, it's going to be a problem.
I would do a number of things, three things if I'm going to switch up things if I'm Wade. And one has to do with what you're talking about. In last year's Super Bowl, Philadelphia was able to get to Tom Brady often. Late in the game, what did Jim Schwartz do? He moved Brandon Graham from being inside a defensive tackle. What you're talking outside, he makes the biggest play as a defensive end, typically lining up inside the cavity, this time lined up left outside more so than he would be. He gets to Tom Brady to create the sack. In Dominican Sue, we have seen sometime during the regular season, Coach, he has played that left defensive end, and he has caused problems. So look for him because New England's best offensive linemen are their center and their two guards. Their weakest, left and the right tackle. So I could see that being a problem. Also, I'm going to blitz the linebackers more so than any other game because I don't want Sony Michel, I don't want James White out in pass protection. One of the liabilities out in pass routes. I don't want the linebackers of the Rams covering them in space. If you look about one of the liabilities of that defense, their pass coverage of their linebackers. And I'm going to take Tlaib, and I'm putting him on Edelman all over the field. Edelman likes to play a rough and tumble game. Tlaib is built for that. Edelman likes to talk trash. He won't talk trash to Tlaib. So I believe that I could negate him. And then I'll put coverage and matchups to the other side. But those are three things that I'm going to do to be able to give Tom Brady some different looks than what we've had during the regular season.
And one thing that you said after the Chiefs fired Bob Sutton, and they were talking about bringing in Rex Ryan or bringing in whomever as defensive coordinator, we talked about how
Coach Mangini. They should have brought in Coach Mangini.
Absolutely. I think they were going to. They heard all the bad stuff he said about Pat Mahomes, cross the name off the list.
that'd be right. Okay. That decision-making process would make total sense.
And so, but you were almost dumbfounded that the Chiefs never sent one more than the Pats could block.
How many third and tens did they have?
They had 3 third and tens in overtime. Didn't send one heavy blitz where you've got to get the ball out quick, make a decision. And that I know that for a long time, blitzing Tom Brady was a recipe to lose. Over the last few years, teams have been able to blitz Tom Brady. Even his MVP season last year, the blitz was effective against Tom Brady. What do you think about that? About the Rams certainly more than Kansas City in the AFC Championship game, sending one more than the Patriots can block and forcing the Pats to get the ball out early.
Well, I don't think it's a function of just one philosophical shift where we're going to blitz more. It's about when you're going to do it, mm-hmm. how you're going to mix it in, how you're going to make things unpredictable. Maybe you don't blitz at all in the first half, and then you blitz a lot in the second half. Maybe you blitz a ton in the first half and switch it up that way, just moving around defensive linemen so there's not certainty from a blocking perspective as to where you're going to go with the ball. I really thought Wade did a nice job of mixing in some double teams on Michael Thomas last week. And I also think he did a great job after the back was hurting him out of the backfield so much in the first half, he started to use the defensive ends to butch him, which means hit him on the way out to slow that down. So I like the adjustments that he made, and I love the fact that he says we're going to have to outplay him because at the end of the day, they're going to have to outplay him, but they're going to have to mix in enough stuff so that it's not pre-snap reads.
Coach, when he says we have to outplay him, what he's trying to say to people is, I'm trying to teach them things they're comfortable with so they can play fast.
Right.
So it's not as if I want them to be better. Because we know Tom's going to play fast. And when he does that, that's what the Chargers got. That's what Kansas City got. But what Wade is trying to say is, I'm going to make sure my guys have whatever we're going to do, we're going to have confidence in it.
And they don't have to be thinking in real time, just reacting to what the situation demands.
And here's the problem. If you're a team that doesn't do a lot of things, if you don't change a lot during the season, to try to change in a big environment can sometimes be detrimental. And what New England will do, I wouldn't be surprised at all if you get a lot of no huddle. They don't have tremendous depth on the defensive line. They've got good players, but they don't bring in a lot of – it's totally different than Philly where they substitute a ton of guys.
Right.
Go fast. Make sure you get up to the line of scrimmage. Force these guys to constantly being on their heels as opposed to getting in down in the dirt and teeing off.
So I have a question about that. When you have – and you talk so much about an identity on offense. When you have an identity on defense, the way Wade Phillips has this defense playing this year, and you also said there are a lot of certainties on this Rams defense, how hard is it to just spend 2 weeks to say, okay, now we're going to switch this up, I'm going to blitz a little bit more, to change your – to change who you were and the sort of the bulk of what you do only in those last 2 weeks and make sure your guys are comfortable doing it?
Well, Wade Phillips, the reason why he's been successful in four different decades is because they do different things. They are not just a straight man-to-man team the way Wade has been in the past. Coach mentioned they did some bracket coverages to Michael Thomas. They did some different things we saw in the championship game. We're expecting them. They have variance. Good teams have different variables of what they can do defensively, and that's what Wade and these Rams coach, what we've seen during the regular season.
Yeah, and to your point, that's why a lot of teams go home in the playoffs. There's this bravado of we do what we do. That's great until someone does what you do better than you do it.
Okay.
And you have no second pitch. And then some guys will go to extremes and they'll try to adjust too much. And it's overload for their players. I thought Wade had a nice balance, like Chris said, of staying within his system, but still having things that he hadn't brought out as much over the course of the system.
Also,
to solve
within
problems.
That system, he's got a guy that's going to line up over your center in Nosegard. He's the best we've seen in football in a long time. I'm getting ready to whoop this guy. You don't need no system for I'm getting ready to bust this guy upside his head and get to your quarterback
right.
with 20 sacks with Aaron Donald at the D-tackle spot.
And this is where, like we were talking actually earlier in the LeBron-Brady part comparison and talking about their intelligence, this is where smart football players matter. Where experienced football players matter, where even if the Rams throughout the season have had basically, we're going to have a relatively speaking vanilla defense, we've got a veteran in Tlaib, veteran in Sue, veteran in Donald, guys who can, Ndamukong Suh, even if most of the year has been lining up next to Aaron Donald, we've seen him at times go outside and play defensive end, and he's done that in his past. Aqib Tlaib's been asked to do a lot of different things in route to winning a Super Bowl in the past as far as we need your best against their best, even if it's not what you're most comfortable with. So you not only need the athletes, you need the guys who can handle it
right.
as far as mentally. And Wade Phillips, his ability to adjust within the game, I believe to be as good as any defensive coordinator in the NFL.
All right, Coach, stick around. Coming up, which team has the edge at running back past the Rams? That's next on First Things First. Here with Coach Mangini. All right, among the many battles that will be brewing come Sunday in Atlanta, the two opposing running backs will be a good one. Rams' Todd Gurley, Patriots' Sony Michel, both first-round picks, both from the University of Georgia, both will be heavily called upon within their offenses. And when asked about playing his former teammate, Gurley kept it simple and said, I want to beat him. All right, Coach, which team has the better running game?
With that insight, I don't know where to go. Pretty good. I feel like I really know the plan now. This is a hard one.
Funny guy, Coach.
Thanks. I do what I can. The Rams have done such a good job through the course of the playoffs in terms of stopping the run. They had the incredibly effective day against Dallas running the ball, which nobody, I think, saw coming, especially not in that degree. Now, that being said, one of the things I like about New England is their ability to move players where they want them to be. And the certainty of where Sue and where Donald will be versus Brockers and Fowler. So that, to me, will help New England. And I would imagine their approach is going to be run right at Donald and Sue. I would double-team those guys, be physical on the first level, and then get up on those little linebackers because the linebackers are small. Those behind-the-line guys are small for your typical linebackers. And then if you want to run the ball outside, I would do that at Brockers and Fowler because Fowler has a little bit more trouble setting the edge and Brockers has a little more trouble moving laterally. So that, to me, is the approach I imagine they'll take. And then incorporating Cordarrelle Patterson in the running game, it may be some inside, some outside, but also the threat that he'll project on those misdirections where they don't give it to him and end up handing it off inside. I like that package of plays that New England has.
And just to build off that, I do wonder if the Rams will do more than Kansas City did in involving Brandon Cooks in their running game when Kansas City never gave the ball to Tyreek Hill on a speed sweep, never just gave him the ball, get the ball in his hands behind the line of scrimmage, see if he can go make a play. I think the question's very interesting because if the question were who has the better running backs, that's an easy question. That's the Rams. They've got, in my eyes, the best running back.
Well, easy questions don't make the show.
Right. No, no, no. Of course. But I mean, but I want to just draw for the audience the distinction between, because I think you hear this, you say, well, maybe the team with Todd Gurley, offensive player of the year in the NFL, maybe the best running back in the league, but it's the running game. So it's to coach's point, how you use those guys and how those guys match up against the opposition. Where New England has, with Trey Flowers and with the way they built that defensive line, been dedicated to finding big, strong guys that, to quote coach, would rather punch than dance and will want to fight you in that phone booth. And the Rams, who despite having what I consider to be a lot of talent on that defensive line throughout the regular season, were very bad stopping the run. Now, in the playoffs, it's been a different story. But in the regular season, they had been a bad run-stuffing team, pardon me. So I think it is a little more nuanced than the talent of each backfield would suggest.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with talent. It's about scheme. New England's running attack is built for. New England's going to put seven guys in the phone booth. And when you look at the tail of the tape, they will dwarf James Devlin and Rob Gronkowski. When you look at him matched up against the linebackers, Mark Barron is undersized. He was a strong safety at Alabama. Now he's playing inside linebacker for the Rams. He is not an inside linebacker. And Bill Belichick and Tom Brady will make sure that they take advantage of that. James Devlin blocking up on that second level. You double team Ndamukong Suh. You double team Aaron Donald. You have one other free lineman that's able to get up on that second level. So it's not about talent. It's not about Todd Gurley. It's not about CJ. No, it's not about them. It's about that blocking scheme. And I believe that the Rams have the best offensive line. They're the only team in the NFL. Offensive line starts every game this year. So I think they have a better offensive line. But when it comes down to scheme, and coach had another little tidbit based on his Super Bowl experience, know it's going to be a neutral crowd. Coach knows they're going to go no huddle early. So they're going to be able to pick out where they are, New England. Where's Ndamukong Suh? Okay, well, we're either going to run at him or we're going to come up with some type of wham block to take advantage of his aggressiveness. So in a neutral site game like the Super Bowl, a lot of corporate fans, they don't have the noise impact on the game. It's the best time to go no huddle in any of the other playoff games, any other environment, because it's corporate and it's very quiet to a certain degree.
And it's about awareness as well. So oftentimes they'll motion a wide receiver in and he'll crack down on a defensive end. So he'll come from the outside in and block down. And some teams have, those defensive ends have no awareness. It's like they've seen the play for the first time and New England takes advantage of that, those types of things. Or they'll get the defensive lineman to run up the field thinking pass and then they run a draw. Or now it's a trap, an inside trap, where the defensive lineman thinks, oh, God, I penetrated. What a great play I made. And then he gets ear-holed and blown up. So it's going to be about that for the Rams, too. And I think New England has excellent awareness in terms of what teams are trying to get done against them. It's how good of an awareness that defensive front will have of what New England's going to do to them.
And how much about the Patriots' predictability will they have to change up? And by predictability, I mean you use the numbers a lot over the last few weeks. When Devlin and Sony are on the field, they run the ball 85%+ of the time. When James White was on the field against the Chargers, they passed the ball 97% of the time. Mm-hmm. Those numbers are extremes, but it's similar to throughout the year. James White, if he's on the field, it's a pass play. He's either going to chip block or he's going to go out and to receive a pass. Sony Michel in there, it's a running play, certainly if James Devlin's out there. Do you think they stay consistent to that formula, or they switch it up in the Super Bowl with 2 weeks prepare so Wade Phillips has another thing to deal with?
I'm sure they have a plan But even in the playoffs, because I gave everyone the script. No one listened to me. The Chargers, they didn't listen to me. Mm-hmm. I said, hey, man, when the meathead comes in, the fullback,
because
typically
the ball.
It's not James Devlin, but we call a fullback a meathead because he don't need a whole bunch of meat to make a meal. Yeah. He's looking for something to
or
hit.
Or dump truck is another
yeah, one. Absolutely. And when he's on the field, those are numbers in the regular season. It's 91% him and Sony Michel on the field. So what they've done, I would force them to go out of it. If they bring James Devlin's on the field, Sony Michel, I'm going eight people in the box. I'm going to force you to make them do. Those are the things you have to make New England do and realize that they will change. They will put James White in the game in the second half. And you know what they're going to do?
Run
him on a draw. Yep. So, yes, it's the Super Bowl, and you're just going to have to be better because you're not going to be able to know when they're doing certain things. You're going to just have to be better and be able to beat guys and be able to get guys on the ground as far as tackling.
And here's the tough thing about tendencies is you'll go into the meeting room, you're like, look, fellas, it's 97% that they're going to run the ball. And then what you try to do offensively is break that tendency early. Now,
yes.
You only break it once. But then the guys come over the sideline and say,
like,
yeah, I was playing
us.
The run. You said it was going to be this. It's totally different this game. And remember, everybody assumes that New England's going to be different. They're going to have something special. So they only have to give you a little bit of cheese mm-hmm. to make you believe it's something totally
yeah,
different.
Patriots tried to do that in last week's game in the first half. They tried to do that to throw them off their scent. But mm-hmm. ultimately, it comes back. When James Devlin's in the game, I don't care if it's Rex Burkhead. I don't care who it is. They're going to run the football.
And you got to get the guys back over on the bench and say, look, they broke the tendency, but we're going to continue to play the odds here until they prove otherwise. So just hold your ground. It'll come back to who they are.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.